Happy Friday, everybody. It is Friday, March 11th, 2022. This is the Second Half Podcast. I'm Tom Powell, and if you're listening to this, as always, that means you made it through another week, and margaritas are in order. For those of you who have found me for the very first time, what I like to do at the beginning of these episodes is give you a little bit of background information. Because this is not a professional podcast. This podcast, as you can see if you hop over to my YouTube channel, is an amateur podcast. I shoot it in my home office with a $100 mic I bought on Amazon and no soundboard. I don't know how to even work a soundboard. This is just an amateur podcast. You're going to hear some background noise. You're going to hear my dogs bark. You're going to hear the fan in my window. It's meant to be that way. It's meant to be like two people sitting on the deck shooting the shit. So if you hear some background noise, just roll with it, all right? No reason to bring it to my attention. I'm already aware of it. Secondly, if you're finding me for the very first time, chances are you don't know about my website. So if you have an opportunity to, swing by oldhippiemedia.com. That's oldhippie, H-I-P-P-I-E, media.com. And there you're going to find anything else you want to know about me, including my blog, my merch store, over 300 items to choose from, links to buy my first two books entitled A Grateful Life and Dearest Renee. They're available on paperback and ebook formats, as well as links on where you can follow me on all the various social media sites and a link to my Patreon, which is a subscription service featuring bonus podcast episodes every other Tuesday. So if you end up liking this podcast and you want to hear more, there are episodes every other Tuesday on Patreon where I don't talk politics and I tell you more personal stories from my past, if that makes sense, to kind of lay out what that format is. Anyway, that's oldhippiemedia.com, and that's the last we're going to talk about that, as I don't like to turn this into a huge pimp me session, even though if I don't pimp me, nobody will. So, what do we got going on this week? Well, before we get into the stories of the world and the politics, let me give you an update on the story I talked to you about last week, which is me finding out that I have a daughter that I never knew, a 32-year-old daughter, and a couple of grandkids, and a son-in-law. Well, I had an opportunity to this week. My wife and I actually had an opportunity to this week FaceTime my daughter. So it's the first time we got to speak to each other face-to-face as opposed to just in text message format, which was awesome. She has a lot of Powell mannerisms. She looks like a lot of Powells. She certainly talks like a lot of Powells, so there's probably no doubt in my mind that she's a Powell. No offense towards my daughter, but I also really got to, for the first time ever, speak to my grandkids, which was, wow, that was something else. They are a couple of great kids. And seeing them at this stage in their life makes you realize you missed a lot of time with them. But it's an interesting dynamic, and I cannot wait to be able to have them sitting next to me at a face-to-face meeting and just asking me questions. It was probably one of the best FaceTimes I've ever had in my entire life. And FaceTimes haven't been around a very long time in the grand scheme of my life, but nonetheless, probably the best FaceTime I've ever had. My wife and I are very excited about this. Now, obviously, I've had phenomenal FaceTimes with a whole bunch of family members. I don't want anybody to think I'm dissing anybody else in this. But I got grandkids. It's a mind fuck, man. It's a mind fuck and a half, you know? But it's cool as shit. And I got to buy Jolly Ranchers because they like Jolly Ranchers. And I can't show up without Jolly Ranchers. I'm grandpa, for fuck's sake. So I'll be going to the store to buy Jolly Ranchers in the next couple of weeks as we are preliminarily scheduled to meet. If everything goes well with my hip and my eye and everything, shouldn't be an issue. So, that's my bit of personal good news. For more personal stories, once again, you can tune into the Patreon subscription service where you can subscribe for as low as $4.20 a month. All right, now on to the world stage, politics, social issues, and whatnot. Let's start with Ukraine as that insanity rages forth. The squeeze on Russia is continuing. Some people call it cancel culture when this happens to somebody on social media, but essentially, the way the world is responding to Russia and their attack on Ukraine is to just squeeze the ever-loving life right out of them. More and more countries, companies are cutting ties with Russia. More and more companies are pulling out of Russia, closing their facilities, not offering their products or services in Russia. And now more and more sanctions are getting put on, including what might possibly be the biggest blow to Russia's economy yet, which is the world beginning to cut off energy imports from Russia. A chunk of Europe heavily relies on energy from Russia, and we here in the United States import some Russian oil. Russian oil, for the idiots out there who continue to troll me on social media and tell me that we have quadrupled our purchasing of Russian oil. We are now dependent on Russian oil. Oh my God, can you believe this? We are once again purchasing Russian oil. We never fucking stopped purchasing Russian oil, but we are far from dependent on it. Far from dependent on it. Russian oil makes up between 3 and 7% of all oil imports in this country. Now, is that going to hurt? Of course it's going to hurt. Even at 3 to 7% in an already lean market with already out of control prices, taking any amount of product out of the system is going to add to the misery. It's going to add to the consternation. So of course it's going to hurt. But we've got to strangle Russia to the ground. And this is what's happening. Now people say, why is that such a big deal to Russia? Because you got to remember that it's not like here in the United States. Here in the United States, we have a federal government, and then we have a bunch of private oil companies that drill. In Russia, the state owns the oil companies. So the federal government is making money off of drilling and exporting energy, oil and natural gas. And the world is like, yeah, we're going to have to cut that off. Now, that's really going to hurt Europe. Europe heavily depends on Russian energy. So Europe is really going to feel the pinch before we do, but it's going to hurt here as well. But the same fucking people that are going to piss and moan that Joe Biden cut off Russian imports of oil, thus causing a little bit more pain at the pump, are also going to turn around and go, I can't believe Joe Biden was buying Russian oil. So you can't fucking win no matter what. In other Russia-Ukraine news, this past week we saw Russians attack Europe's largest nuclear power plant, a plant that was left ablaze at the end of that battle. And, you know, Putin is old enough to remember the old Soviet Union. It's what he's trying to put back together. And he's old enough to remember Chernobyl. And here we are, seeing Soviet, and that's what I'm going to call them, because that's what they are, Soviet soldiers attacking the continent's largest nuclear power plant. That's the sign of a fucking madman. That's the sign of somebody out of control. The sign of somebody who has no end game, has no off-ramp, doesn't know what to do with the pushback he's getting. And how he doesn't know how to deal with the fact that he's losing this war. And that makes for a very dangerous situation moving forward. And the sooner that somebody within the Russian higher ranks can get to this guy and take him out, the better the world is going to be. This is a man on the edge. And he's got to get taken out, otherwise he's going to wind up taking the fucking world out. But that wasn't even the shittiest news of the week. Because here on the American front, we have elected officials that felt it would be a good idea to jeopardize the location and life of Ukrainian President Zelensky in order to score some type of social media political points. Excuse me. The entire Senate this past week, or since we last spoke, held a secret Zoom call with Zelensky to discuss how the United States could support him and his country in their efforts. And it was agreed upon at the beginning of, according to all reports, at the beginning of that Zoom call, it was agreed upon that nobody would discuss said Zoom call. But certain Republicans couldn't help it. And they tweeted out the fact that they had had this Zoom call with Zelensky, posting still photographs of Zelensky on the screen and talking about what a great meeting they had, because they want to be seen as interacting with world leaders, because they all have ambitions for higher office, but they're never going to get there because they're all too fucking stupid. Anyway, this group of elected officials, shockingly, all Republicans, and it included Marco Rubio, who, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who have to go, but Marco Rubio has to be at the top of that list. Has to be at the top of that list. What the fuck, man? This guy not only tweeted out about the meeting, he tweeted out about the meeting during the fucking meeting. During the meeting. It's not like he told somebody that he knows that he's having this private secret Zoom call with the president of Ukraine, who, by the way, made the Zoom call from an active fucking war zone. No, he did it on Twitter. He tweets this out for the fucking world to see, putting Zelensky's life and location at risk. And then when he's called on it with George Stephanopoulos, he just sits there with this smug look on his face and goes, "No. No, I don't think it endangered his life at all. No." Yeah, it's because you're too fucking stupid. It did endanger his life. And you're a fucking disgrace to the office that you hold. You should be stripped of your committee. And God willing, and I don't even fucking believe in God, you get voted out by a fucking landslide, you ignorant piece of shit. The fuck is wrong with these people, man? I digress. Let me wrap up my Ukraine's segment here by telling you why I think what was discussed on that Zoom call is a bad idea. Okay? What Zelensky is asking for... Excuse me, I've got to refresh my water. And for those of you watching on YouTube, see, just water. It's always water. You guys always see me drinking out of this Dunkin' Donuts cup? That's it. It's always water. It's just my metal, my zombie apocalypse ready cup. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. So what Zelensky's asking for, what he was asking for in that Zoom meeting, and what he's asking the world for, is a no-fly zone over the Ukraine. He wants the United Nations to declare the airspace of Ukraine a no-fly zone. But that's not what he's asking. Wait, Tom, you just said that's what he's asking for. Yeah, that's what he's technically asking for, but what he's really asking for is the world to go to war with Russia. Because that's what that would result in. And for anybody out there who's saying that we should initiate a no-fly zone, you know, maybe you're right, maybe you're not right, but you got to stop and think about what that actually entails, okay? If we, as a member of the United Nations, or even as a member of NATO, decide that we are going to initiate a no-fly zone over Ukraine, knowing that Russia has invaded Ukraine and is currently actively attacking it, then what we are essentially saying is we are willing to send U.S. fighter jets into the sky to shoot down Russian planes right now. Because Russia's not going to adhere to the no-fly zone. We know that's not going to happen. So if we're going to honor the no-fly zone, then by definition, we have to shoot down a Russian fighter pilot. What the fuck do you think happens when we shoot down a Russian fighter pilot? We're at war with Russia. So let's just call that what it is. It's not a no-fly zone. He's asking us to collectively declare war with Russia. He's asking the world to declare war with Russia. And he's disguising it by calling it a no-fly zone. Now, listen, I'm in favor of helping here, but we got to be honest about what we're asking. If we declare a no-fly zone, it is going to necessitate us shooting down Russian jets. That's it. They're not just going to suddenly pull out. This is not going to happen. But that's what everybody keeps clamoring about. That's what he keeps clamoring about. That's what certain members of the back Ukraine society in the United States of America keep clamoring about. And once again, I'm in favor of helping Ukraine. But goddamn, let's just fucking put all the cards on the table. Just say, I want you to declare war with Russia. Because that's really what you're asking. If we could awkwardly segue out of Ukraine talk and discuss for a little bit any updates and ongoing issues with the January 6th investigation, because now we're starting to see some pretty big movement in the January 6th investigations. You know, for months, what have we heard? Well, how come nobody's been charged with conspiracy? How come nobody's been charged with sedition? How come nobody's been charged with insurrection? This was a fucking tour. This was Antifa. This was BLM. This was blah, 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 blah. Well, now, as always seems to be the case, the bullshit narratives are falling apart at warp speed. We have our first guilty verdict in our first January 6th trial. Now, up until now, what we've been seeing is a lot of littler fish make plea deals to avoid going to trial. But now we're starting to actually have trials, okay? Guy Wesley Reffitt faces a maximum of 60 years in prison. His sentencing is set for June 8th. His son, Jackson Reffitt, testified against him and offered some of the strongest evidence in the trial. Reffitt, a 49-year-old father of three from Wiley, Texas, was indicted by a grand jury on five counts last year for transporting a rifle and a semi-automatic handgun to Washington, D.C., and then carrying the handgun onto U.S. Capitol grounds, where he allegedly participated in the January 6th, 2021 riot and impeded law enforcement officers. He was also charged with obstruction of justice, illegally entering the Capitol complex, and obstructing Congress's counting of the 2020 electoral votes. Stephen M. D'Antonio, I hope I'm saying that right, and I know I'm not, the assistant director in charge of the FBI's Washington field office, said in a statement on Tuesday that the verdict, quote, should serve as a reminder for others who committed crimes on the Capitol that day that these are serious charges and the FBI and our law enforcement partners will do what it takes to hold them accountable. Now, therein lies a key line. It should serve as a, what did he say here? Let me roll back up here. It should serve as a reminder to others who committed crimes at the Capitol that day. This was a message being sent. This was a message being sent because this is a guy who's not contrite about what he did. This is a guy who's not sorry about what he did. This is a guy whose wife isn't sorry about what he did. He's sorry he got caught, and he's not backing down on any of it. And they're going to make an example out of this piece of shit. Reffitt, a member of the far-right militia group, the Texas Three Percenters, pleaded not guilty to all five charges and tried unsuccessfully to have some counts thrown out. Now, that's where I want to stop again. A member of the far-right militia group, the Texas Three Percenters, that's key. That's key. I want you guys to listen to me here. I've been reading a lot about this shit. I follow the news relentlessly. I'm telling you right now, if you know a three percenter, keep your fucking distance. These people, the Reddit chat rooms and the various social media apps where these fuckers spread their conspiracy bullshit, these fuckers are pissed. And they are hell-bound and determined to try and overthrow this government again. And they believe, among all the other groups, you got the Proud Boys and all of those other groups, and we're going to talk about a couple of those groups here in a minute. The 3 percenters, from everything that I'm reading, the 3 percenters are the ones who actually believe we are currently in more or less, for lack of a better way of putting it, a silent civil war, and they're just waiting to start shooting any liberal they see in the country. I'm telling you, I'm warning you, you heard it here, I'm telling you, if you know any 3 percenters, keep your fucking distance. These assholes are fucking insane. I wouldn't have anything to do with a 3 percenter right now. They actually believe we're in a civil war, and it is almost time for them to turn it into a live civil war, as opposed to a silent civil war. These are the most dangerous motherfuckers out there. Refit's 19-year-old son, Jackson, who turned his father into law enforcement following the January 6th attack, told the jury that he had learned of his father's membership in the mob when he returned to the family's home on January 6th to see his mother and sister watching news coverage of the events, and his mother told him that his father was there. According to the records, according to the recordings played for the jury, Jackson captured his father admitting he had carried a gun outside the Capitol, an offense that is punishable by years in prison. He recorded his old man. That's how fucking serious this shit is, man. He recognized the fact that his father had been radicalized. And that he was responsible for being a part of a group that was attempting to end the American experiment. That's how fucking important this is. Quote, "You carried a weapon onto Capitol grounds," Jackson is heard saying. Sorry, I messed up my notes here. Ruffett later responded, "I did it. I did bring a weapon on a property that we own." That's the part where I messed up because I was trying to take some notes here. I apologize. I should have double-checked my notes before getting into this. And that's another thing that you hear out of these groups. I wanted to pause right there again. I did. I brought a gun, a weapon, onto the property that we own. Okay, so you hear this a lot, right? Well, we own that land. That's our house. And you're right. We do own it. Our tax dollars paid for it. It's the people's house. It's the people's chamber. But you can't just fucking walk in there with a gun. There are still rules, you fucking moron. Technically speaking, you own every police car in your town. Tell you what. Walk up and try to get into a cop car tonight and see how it goes. I mean, you own it, right? You want to really get technical? You paid for the gun on the hip of your local cop. Reach out and tell him that's my gun and grab it from him. No? Don't feel like doing that one, huh? Interesting. Now, I told you that the kid testified against him, and make no doubt about it, emotions did run high in that courtroom when Jackson was describing the threat his dad made against him and his sister. And this is the part that is really disgusting about these men who have been radicalized. They told him, his sister Peyton, the two kids, Peyton and Jackson, told their father they had to turn him in to the authorities. And this is what he said to them. And this is the part that is really, truly important. Quote, "If you turn me in, you're a traitor, and traitors get shot." can you imagine being so radicalized that you're willing to shoot your own kid over politics? Wow. Jackson ultimately turned over the audio recordings and pictures of his father at the Capitol to the FBI. William Welch, Guy Reffitt's attorney, called no witnesses, and Reffitt did not testify in his own defense. U.S. District Judge Dabney Friedrich cautioned the jury, quote, "You must not assume the defendant is guilty because he chose not to testify." Right, that's true. You must assume he's guilty because he's guilty. Because there's photographic and video evidence of him there, because he said he did it, because his other family members said he did it. I'm still blown away by what he said to his kids. "You're a traitor, and traitors get shot." Can you fucking imagine what goes through the head of those kids as they're hearing their father say that to them? Like, is Dad going to shoot me tonight? What the fuck, man? More than 750 people have been charged in the investigation, and over 200 have entered guilty pleas. And as I said earlier, that's because we were dealing with the little fish early on. And a lot of those entered into guilty pleas to avoid lengthy prison sentences as a result of a trial. Now we're starting to get into the bigger fish, the more violent fish, the people who helped plan it, the people who aren't backing down, and the people who tell their kids that they're going to kill them if they do the right thing. In addition to that bit of good news, hearing that that piece of shit has been found guilty and faces 60 years and a potential sentencing in June, we have this bit of good news. A member of the far-right Oath Keepers extremist group has become the first to admit to engaging in seditious conspiracy on January 6th to keep President Biden from taking office. He admitted what? He admitted to engaging in seditious conspiracy? An Oath Keeper? Well, that doesn't sound like a BLM activist to me. Let's see what this is all about. Joshua James, 34, of Arab, Alabama, which is ironic as fuck that there's a town in Alabama named Arab, pleaded guilty in federal court in Washington on Wednesday to helping lead a group that prosecutors say sent two tactically equipped teams into the Capitol and organized a cache of weapons in a hotel just outside the city. But wait a minute, I thought this was an unarmed insurrection. We got one guy getting found guilty of his acts on January 6th, and he was armed. Now we have this gentleman admitting to organizing a cache of weapons for the insurrectionist. Interesting, interesting, interesting. He also pleaded guilty to one count of obstructing an official proceeding, and he may face the stiffest sentence of any January 6th defendant so far, according to preliminary sentencing guidelines. Now, the fact that he's cooperating is obviously going to mean he's going to get a much lighter sentence, so everybody needs to go into this aware of that. As part of his plea, James agreed to cooperate with federal investigators, including testifying in front of a grand jury. This motherfucker going to sing like a bird to save his ass. You know it. James, an Army veteran who was injured fighting in Iraq, was also indicted on the sedition charge in January, along with 10 others, including Oath Keepers founder and leader Stuart Rhodes. James faced multiple felony counts of obstructing the formal counting of the Electoral College, as well as assaulting a D.C. police officer during his time inside the Capitol. He was also accused of tampering with documents to destroy his communication with other Oath Keepers. Prosecutors agreed to dismiss the charges other than seditious conspiracy and obstruction counts. Both charges carry a maximum of 20-year prison terms. No defendant has yet been sentenced to the maximum term, so that everybody understands that. Five other Oath Keepers, apart from the 11 charged with seditious conspiracy, have already pleaded guilty and agreed to cooperate with the government, but James is the first to plead guilty to sedition specifically. Pleading guilty to planning this event. You know, the thing that we were told Antifa did. which isn't even an organization. The plea marks the first successful use of a sedition charge by the federal prosecutors in nearly two decades. Federal law defines seditious conspiracy as two or more people who, quote, conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States, end quote. Or act, quote, by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States, end quote. By the way, with his conviction on that charge, because he's pleading guilty, James gives up his right to military benefits, which include, or which could be worth millions of dollars over the course of a lifetime, as he is a veteran. So my question is, how much more do we need to see before the Trump supporters out there, the people who are still making excuses for January 6th, actually admit that BLM or anybody who adheres to the Antifa mindset had nothing to do with this? And you have dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of people pleading guilty on various charges, and now you've got people starting to plead guilty on actually planning this event. And none of them are BLM. None of them are what would be typically defined as Antifa. He said with air quotes for all of you not watching the YouTube video. How much longer? How much more? How much longer are you guys going to hold on to the conspiracy bullshit that this wasn't a bunch of Trump-supporting Karens throwing a hissy fit that they didn't get their way in the election? I mean, these guys are pleading guilty. Others are being found guilty. What else do you need to see? Here, let's add on to the pile, okay? Because in other January 6th news, the FBI also arrested Enrique Tarrio, leader of the far-right group, the Proud Boys. Wow, look at this. We've got Oath Keepers and Three Percenters and Proud Boys. Where are all of the defendants from BLM? Where are all of the quote-unquote Antifa members? Once again, that's not an organization, but using terminology from the Trump-supporting right. Where are they? I'm seeing Three Percenters. I'm seeing Oath Keepers. I'm seeing Proud Boys. I'm not seeing any BLM or Antifa. Go figure. Tarrio has been indicted for conspiracy related to the assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. Tarrio, 38, was arrested in Miami. And if you haven't seen the video of his arrest, he was arrested in the middle of the night and was told to come out of the house. Spotlights lighting up the front of the house so they could take him into custody. And he did so, in a fog because he was probably asleep and in his skivvies. And it's a great video. You should watch it. sorry. Where was I? Tarrio, 38, was arrested in Miami and is expected to appear in court Tuesday in the Southern District of Florida. The indictment also includes five other Proud Boys members who were previously charged in relation to January 6th. Tarrio has not been accused of taking part physically in the Capitol rioting, but the Justice Department alleges he led the advance planning. Sorry, that's my water bottle you hear off to the side. The advance planning and remained in contact with some of the Proud Boys while they were taking part in the Capitol breach. And that's going to be the key part for him. The Proud Boys leader had been arrested on January 4th, 2021, and accused of bringing ammunition into the District of Columbia and burning a Black Lives Matter banner. He was then released the next day in order to stay out of Washington, but according to the indictment, Tarrio allegedly continued to direct the Proud Boys during the rioting at the Capitol and on social media and in encrypted chat rooms. He also claimed credit for what had happened. The indictment alleges that in December 2020, Tarrio and Proud Boys members conspired to obstruct and stop the certification of the Electoral College vote on January 6th. Prosecutors said that the indictment, indictment that in December, an unnamed individual sent Tarrio a document entitled 1776 Returns, which described a plan to occupy multiple buildings, including congressional chambers. Tario later created multiple encrypted messaging groups to discuss plans. On January 5th, after he had been ordered not to be in the District of Columbia, Tario met with Stuart Rhodes, the head of another far-right group, the Oath Keepers, and others in D.C. In a parking garage. Now, how could he be in a D.C. parking garage if he's been ordered to stay out of D.C.? And these guys are the Law and Order Party. Huh. The Capitol was discussed, according to people familiar with that meeting in the D.C. parking garage. The next day, on January 6th, about 100 members of the Proud Boys gathered at the Washington Monument at 6 a.m. Several are alleged to have, quote, directed, mobilized, and led members of the crowd onto the Capitol grounds and into the Capitol, leading to the dismantling of metal barricades, destruction of property, and assaults on law enforcement, end quote, the indictment says. Tario posted on social media that day, January 6th, quote, make no mistake, we did this. Motherfucker, we aren't going to make a mistake. And we're going to use your own fucking words against you. The other guy's facing 6 years, I guarantee you your ass becomes a federal witness. I'll tell you right now, mark it down right now, March 11th, 2020, you heard it here first, this motherfucker is going to become a federal witness. He's going to flip, he's going to turn. Telling you. At 2:41 p.m. on January 6th, he wrote, quote, proud of my boys and my country. You saw what was happening at the January 6th insurrection, and you tweeted out, proud of your boys. You saw cops getting beaten, bear sprayed, windows at the Capitol building being shattered, smoke on the steps of the Capitol building, and that made you proud? Tario has been indicted on conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction of an official proceeding, and two counts of, quote, assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers, and destruction of government property, end quote. This case is being prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia and the Justice Department's Counterterrorism Division. This is the completion of a 180 in this country. Now, what do I mean by that? You remember when Obama was running for office? And he was running against McCain the first time around. And McCain thought his X factor was going to be Palin, his vice president. You guys all remember Sarah Palin, Caribou Barbie, the helicopter moose hunter. Remember one of her big slogans, her big taglines, the thing that she used to like to repeat at political rally after political rally after political rally was palling around with terrorists? Can you believe we got a Democratic presidential candidate here who's palling around with terrorists? And since that point in time, the Republican Party has gone from the 100% all-American, protect everything American at all costs, I can't believe you fucking terrorists out there are trying to infiltrate our country, they've now done a complete 180 to where they are now the people breaking the windows at the Capitol building, beating Capitol police officers, and being the terrorists themselves. The ones that are under investigation by the Counterterrorism Division. The FBI told us white nationalist domestic terrorist organizations were the biggest threat to the United States of America, and the right wing scoffed at it. Do you fucking believe that? They didn't say it was brown people with hijabs. Bruh. They're fucking right! Wasn't a bunch of fucking brown people with their faces covered, climbing the walls at the Capitol building, smearing shit, putting their feet up on the speaker's desk. No, it was domestic fucking terrorists. It was these assholes these white nationalist Klan members without their fucking hoods. The Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, these are all white nationalist domestic terrorist organizations that need to be squashed into the fucking ground like campfire ash. All right, we're going to get off of January 6th for a minute because I want to spotlight a couple of cases of absolutely abhorrent behavior from elected officials. The one I'm going to end on is still mind-blowing to me. I've read probably a dozen articles on the one I'm going to end on, and I still can't believe every time I read it. But first, we need to talk about Lauren Boebert. Yeah. Yep. I know. Some of you are in your cars right now going, oh, he's going to talk about Lauren Boebert. Jesus, fucking bitch. I have to. Lauren Boebert chastised the President Biden during his State of the Union address, if you recall. Biden was talking about soldiers who are exposed to burn pits in war zones. Now, real quickly, if you don't know what I'm talking about, as you could possibly imagine, a temporary base put up in a foreign land somewhere is going to generate a fuck ton of garbage, right? It's going to generate an ass load of debris. And if you stop and think about it, what do you do with all that? You don't have dumpster service. You know, you're in the middle of a fucking desert. You're in the middle of a fucking jungle. What are you going to do? What are you going to get? How are you going to get rid of it? And so what the United States military has taken to doing is creating burn pits where they literally burn all refuse. Doesn't matter what it is. If it's garbage, it gets thrown into the burn pit, and it gets burned. And as you could quite possibly imagine, there are toxins released into the air in massive doses when doing this. And he was discussing soldiers, during the State of the Union, he was discussing soldiers who are exposed to these burn pits and come back home and develop life-threatening cancers. Now, he was using his son as an example because his son, Bo, served in both Kosovo and in the Middle East and was exposed to these burn pits. And he developed brain cancer and died. During that part of the State of the Union, Lauren Boebert, famously now, interrupted the State of the Union address to chastise Biden about 13 soldiers who had been shot in an attack on the airport in Afghanistan as we were withdrawing. Okay? She's so adamant about these 13 soldiers' lives. Every last one of them, as important as any other soldier's life, but when talking about burn pit exposure, she had to interrupt the speech to bring up those 13 soldiers. Okay? You feel strongly about it. We get it. But then what does she do? She turns around and she votes against a bill that would support veterans that are sick and dying from toxic exposure to these burn pits. There was a bill, the Honoring Our Pact Act, that she voted against. I thought you were all for these soldiers' lives. I thought you cared enough about these soldiers' lives that you had to interrupt a State of the Union address. Just not enough to cast a vote to help them. Right? When you actually have the power to help them in the form of your vote, nope, can't do it. When you have no power to do anything other than make a fucking ass out of yourself, you do that. 3.5 million veterans, it would have helped with access to health care and disability benefits after they served our country overseas. This woman has no compass. None. Absolutely none. If I could be so bold, she's a barmaid somebody found and said, hey, let's make this dumbass congresswoman. That's all she is. People go, oh, you're ripping on barmaids? No, not in the least bit. Noble work. It's not congressional level work, though. And Colorado has got to do better. They have to. This is fucking insane. How do you feel so strongly about veterans' lives that you actually interrupt the State of the Union address, but then in the same fucking week, you cast a vote against helping those same veterans? What the fuck is wrong with you? But as bad as that was, believe it or not, that wasn't the worst we saw this week. Oh. Once again, I still can't believe this story. This is the one that I'm going to wrap up on here, because this is the worst one we saw this week. And every fucking time I read it, I am flabbergasted by it. The worst we saw this week was Michigan Republican Robert R.J. Regan. Regan said he tells his daughters to, quote, lie back and enjoy it, end quote, if rape is inevitable. Let me read the whole thing. Yeah, I took a hit first. Regan, who is running for a state house and a state house seat, and let's be clear, he's not just running for a state house seat in Michigan. He is the front runner in the Republican Party to get that state house seat. The Republican front runner. He made the comments on a Sunday Facebook live stream hosted by a conservative group. Regan used the crude analogy while telling another participant that it was not too late to decertify the 2020 presidential election, saying he tells his daughters, quote, well, if rape is inevitable, you should just lie back and enjoy it. Let me just continue reading this. The Kent County candidate who won a four-way special election to snag the Republican nomination for the seat last week also recently said that Russia's invasion of Ukraine was a, quote, fake war, just like the fake pandemic. Now, before I give you my opinion on all of this, just so that you understand, the Michigan Republican Party, now this is a Michigan Republican Party that put together its own set of fake electors to try and overturn the 2020 election, was listening to Trump tell them to not count certain votes from certain counties. This is a Michigan Republican Party that has done some very bad and deceivious, shitty fucking things. They've come out and condemned this man's comments. That's how bad this is. So let's see here. Regan, in just this one little story, says that now, this week, this happened this week, keep in mind, in 2022, March of 2022, he's telling people that it is still not too late to decertify the 2020 presidential election. The pandemic was fake. The Russian war in Ukraine is fake. And women, if they're going to get raped, should lie back and enjoy it. Robert Regan of Michigan is an absolutely subhuman, abhorrent piece of shit. I, I don't even know where to begin with all of these things. First of all, it's 2022. The 2020 presidential election is fucking over. I hope somebody in Michigan plays this for that fucking asshole. It's over, you ignorant sack of dog shit. As is your political career. Over. So the fact that you're still talking about decertifying the 2020 presidential election in March of 2022 already shows me you're too fucking stupid to hold elected office. And yeah, that's the correct terminology. You're too fucking stupid to hold elected office. You're too stupid to hold any kind of office. At all, anywhere, in any state, in any corner of this country. Then we move into the Russian war is fake. So you're a Putin apologist on top of it. Shocker. I said this in a video, to say it again here. The people who say that the Russian attempt to invade and infiltrate the United States of America was a failure are dead fucking wrong. It was actually a stunning success. They got themselves an entire political party. Now, is that to say that every Republican is a Russian supporter? No, but Russia has taken over the Republican Party as we know it. There is no denying that anymore. Now we even have assholes like this saying that the war is fake, which is really not a shock considering he also said that the entire pandemic was fake. But taking all of that insanity, the pandemic's fake, the war is fake, we can still decertify the 2020 election, take all of that and put it on the back burner. You actually told your daughters that if rape is inevitable, if you're going to get raped, lie back and enjoy it? I couldn't bring myself to look into this asshole any further, but I gotta say, if this guy's kids are under the age of 18, they should be taken from him immediately. I'm not even joking when I say that. If that's what he tells his daughters. But furthermore, while I don't even come close to pretending to speak on behalf of any woman or women group of women, I certainly don't imply that I'm speaking for all women who have survived sexual assault. But the fact that that's what you would tell any woman, stop fighting, lie back and enjoy it. Enjoy. You know what? When they eventually find something on this cocksucker, and they will find something on him, and you guys wind up prosecuting him up there in Michigan, make sure you get the maximum so this motherfucker winds up in prison. So when he's getting ready to get raped in his jail cell, somebody from down the hall, down the cell block, and go, just lie back and enjoy it. It's inevitable. So once again, while I don't speak for any group of women, I'm going to offer up a message on behalf of all women, specifically women who have been survivors of rape. I'm going to offer up a message on their behalf, and any woman can say, you don't speak for me, that's fine. I will say I don't speak for you if you come forward and say that. But on behalf of the rest of the women who don't say that, Robert R.J. Regan of Michigan, go fuck yourself. Any man who would tell any woman, let alone his own fucking daughter, to stop fighting and just enjoy the rape, has thought about raping a woman. You can't convince me otherwise. in my opinion, any man who would say that has thought about raping a woman. Guys, this is just one guy, but this is indicative of a bigger problem. We heard somebody say this during the 2012 election cycle. If rape is inevitable, just lie back and enjoy. Remember whether or not somebody was talking about whether or not it was a legitimate rape? For whatever reason, there are a shitload of Republican men specifically who think that, hey, sometimes rape just happens. Sometimes you just got to roll with it, you know? Don't stiffen up when you jump from the car. It's better to tuck and roll, you know? It's good. Rape's going to happen. Just lay back and enjoy it. Unbelievably sick fucks. Unbelievably sick fucks. It is long overdue that the women of this of the world run the world. Long overdue. And it's assholes like this that tell their own daughters to just lay back and enjoy it. It's assholes like this that are going to guarantee that when the women take over this world, we are going to be their cattle. And we're going to fucking deserve it if we keep putting assholes like this into positions of power. Hey. The thing that threw me for the biggest loop of this entire story, the thing that knocked me on my ass, was the fact that it was his daughters. I'm the father to two daughters. Three daughters. I'm still getting used to that. I'm the father to a 32-year-old daughter, a soon-to-be 21-year-old daughter, and a 17-year-old daughter. And I can't imagine anyone saying that to them, let alone me saying that to them myself. There is nothing enjoyable about rape. There never has been anything enjoyable about rape. There currently isn't anything enjoyable about rape, and there never will be anything enjoyable about rape. To tell anybody to just enjoy it is subhuman. And for everybody listening to this podcast that's on my side of the aisle, politically speaking, you've got to remember this shit, and you've got to get the message out about people like this. We are April, May, June, July, August, September, October. We are 8 months away from a midterm to determine who controls the Senate and who controls the House. 8 months away. That's it. In 8 months, we're all going to be walking into a voting booth to determine the direction of this country over the course of the next 2 years. And I don't want the party that this guy represents anywhere near the levers of power. Oh, my God. To every woman out there, I'm sorry. I'm sorry on behalf of every man that thinks like that. That is fucking insane. But that's the modern Republican Party in the United States of America, unfortunately. And don't get me wrong, the Democrats got their fair share of fuck-offs and issues and problems, but they don't have a problem like this, okay? Republicans aren't running around telling anybody to just enjoy getting raped. This is fucking nuts, man. Sorry, Democrats aren't saying that. I don't know if I said Republicans or Democrats. I'm still at a loss. I'm at an absolute fucking loss. Some notes, if I could, please, moving forward. I am going to be out of town early in April. I'll let you know right before I leave, but I'm going to be in the Bahamas for just a few days. It's literally a quick 4-day getaway. We're gonna hop on down to Miami, Uber our asses over to the cruise ship, and then we're gonna go on a 4-day cruise. We're gonna spend a 3-day cruise, 3-4 day. I don't even remember. We're gonna spend a day in Nassau and a day in Coco Cay. So the point being is, there probably isn't going to be a There isn't going to be a podcast that week, for sure. I'll let you know when that week is coming up, but we're going to have a skip in the rotation. I'm going to be having an opportunity to meet my daughter and my grandchildren here in the next few weeks. So I'll have something to talk about, both on this podcast as well as the Patreon podcast, because that's not something that should be just accessible to only one audience. But once again, I'm not going to reveal who she is because of the hate that the world throws at people. But I will discuss, you know, how that meeting went and you know, what, if anything, is going to happen after that. And then we're going to be heading into a period of time in which I'm going to be trying to get some medical work done. So if, for those of you who don't know, I actually record this podcast on Thursday. So it's actually Thursday the 10th when I'm recording this. I'm going to get off of recording this podcast, and then I'm going to get to work on getting myself referred into a new orthopedic surgeon, hopefully one over at Rush University, so I can get this hip replaced. I don't know if I'm going to be successful in this, but obviously if I can get myself on the list for a hip replacement at some point in time, there's going to be yet another gap in content as I undergo and recover from hip replacement surgery, if I can get that done. But I'll let you guys know about all of that shit as it approaches. It's looking like 2022 might be a bit of a wild year. We got the Bahamas in April. We've got Jamaica booked in October. We've just been invited to a wedding in August, which, once again, I don't know if we're going to that wedding or not. Maybe we are, maybe we're not, but a lot of stuff getting thrown around here. You know what I mean? A lot of stuff getting thrown around here. So it should be an event-filled year of content, certainly for the podcast, if not for anything else. So thank you guys very much for tuning in this week. Tune in next week for a new episode, and as always, until then, stay grateful.